Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, January 5th, 2011. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Standard Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. You may call direct 646-652-4620. That's 888-773-4496, toll-free. Send us your comments anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, S-U-T-T-O-N, Sutton-Associates.net. In his newsletters, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. And folks, these times are critical that you do that. Liberty Talk Radio is now available via iTunes for your listening convenience. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. We are pleased this evening to have with us John Frederick Kosanke, author of Instead of Politics. As our guest, John smashes the whole concept of politics, showing how only the free market can solve the ills of society. Please join us by calling with your questions and comments toll-free, 888-773-4496, and we have him on the line now. Good evening, John.
Hi, Joel.
Fine, John. I'm glad we finally
glad
connected properly.
Show. Thanks for having me.
thank you so much. John, why don't we start with a little background about yourself and how you arrived at where you are now, especially with all of the publications, the journals that you've written, and I believe the couple of books that you've published thus far. And if you can give us some insight on that background, we would appreciate that.
Okay, well, I'm an educator by trade, by training. I used to always think that what we needed to do was change society. Society was at fault, and that's what needed to be changed until I came to the realization that it's politics itself that corrupts society. I have written this book. It started actually as another type of book, guide to information sources. And in the process of gleaning all this information, I came to some surprising conclusions about politics itself, that it is indeed an opposition to the free market, and it's something that's incompatible with the free market.
Okay, I cannot disagree with you there. Now, your book, your current book, is it also available on Amazon as well as an e-book? Is that correct?
Yeah, if you go to Amazon.com. Instead of politics, you can get it either as a print copy or as an ebook for Kindle, and you can have Kindle loaded to your PC as well as your Kindle.
Okay,
and other types of readers.
And the name of that book is Instead of Politics, John.
Yes.
Now you say Instead of Politics. Okay, Instead of Politics, then what?
Instead of politics, you have free market. Everything that the politicians claim that they can do better than the free market is false. The free market can do any service that the politicians provide in much better quality, much more efficient, and less barbaric. Of course, the market is here to provide service for customers, not to subjugate them.
Right. Now, I think you refer to this in some of your writing as free market anarchism. Is that true? Do I have that correct?
is I've referred to myself as an anarcho-capitalist, but it's anarchy is a confusing term, and I think most people would think of anarchy nowadays as running downtown, spray painting on walls, right. Breaking windows, that kind of thing. And right. That's definitely not what I would advocate.
Right. And my experience is whenever I mention to someone, I say, well, you know, actually, I'm an anarchist at heart because I think we should just be truly free people. The first image that comes to mind to most people is that, oh, we're going to have people rioting in the street, people killing each other, burning houses down for no reason. And why is that so? Why do we have that image of total societal chaos when we mention or even breathe the word anarchism?
People are conditioned by the press, licensed media and the tax-funded schools will condition people to support their programs, and they most of the programs have as their objective the complete opposite of what they claim.
Right.
But the free market is actually not an absence of government. The market itself is a form of government. It's an absence of politics. Politicians claim to be government, but they really are more a subjugation than a government.
Right. You know, that's interesting when you say the free market is, in fact, a form of government. I have never heard it stated that way. And when you do, that opens up a whole area. In fact, that sort of expands the mind a little bit as to what is actually possible once you paint it in that light. Now, there are those people, and I would say probably 99% of the population would say, well, there are certain functions that the federal government should, in fact, be responsible for. And the very, very first one, you know what it is, it's defense. But you talk about private defense agencies or PDAs. Can you walk us through how that would work, and how would you answer that, say, well, you know, except for defense?
Private defense agencies will be pretty much operated by insurance companies. Insurance companies have in their best interest keeping their payments low, and the way to keep the payments low is to keep costs down, to actually keep their customers protected. In the case of a federal government or some other political form of protection, you have a monopoly on arms, and you have a tendency toward offense. You have a tendency toward aggression, imperialism, that type of thing. But with competing insurance companies providing defense through private defense agencies, you have market discipline added into the equation, so that you have much more likelihood that you're going to have peace. You don't have mafia-type agencies developing because they will not be they will be avoided by the market.
All right. Now, you know, when you mentioned run by insurance companies, I'm sure anyone who is listening right now has got to be cringing, saying, "Oh my God, you mean those bad insurance companies? They're going to have an army." We're finished. We're doomed at that point because people have an inherent distrust of insurance companies, especially more recently. But also, what is the prevention for abuse of an army if it's owned by the insurance company or is the insurance company just insuring what they're doing, or how does that work?
Insurance companies, well, like they do now, they tend to underwrite certain companies. They only endorse companies that are actually providing the service that will keep their costs low, keep their any kind of aggressions, any kind of losses and damages to a minimum.
Okay. So they wouldn't be owned by the insurance company. Okay.
The more competition you have, the more that you have that scenario. You have competition that keeps it civilized, it keeps it disciplined, keeps the market disciplined, as in any other industry.
Well, who would develop this army, this private army? I mean, who would start it, create it, if you will? Would it be like starting a company? I'm trying to grasp the concept. I like the concept, but I'm having difficulty grasping, you know, how this whole thing would actually come about. Could you walk in Dick and Jane language manner, you know, how we would go about, assuming we're starting from little to scratch, how would we do that? How would that work?
Well, it's already happening. Today you have private security companies are more prevalent than police agencies in protecting people's property.
Right.
It's not going to be one big company. It's already you already have private companies private security companies that protect people's properties. You have private arbitration agencies that resolve disputes in a civilized and fast, speedy fashion, unlike what you have in a state-run system where you have to wait for your case to come to court a long time, and it's quite different.
What would be the incentive for anyone or any entity to establish a private army, if you will?
I don't think private army is really a good term. The incentive that you have now for people to start security companies is the need, the market for people who want protection of their property.
Okay.
You have private residential developments that only allow people in who are owners, guests, who belong there.
Right, the authorized people. Right.
You already have this. Now it's not something really new. It's just taking what now exists and just following it on to where it's going to be 20, 50 years down the road.
Okay, now, I'm sure the retort to that would be, well, what happens if another country invades us? You know, don't we have to have the centralized army with these tanks and big guns and multi-million-dollar airplanes and jets and rockets and all this other stuff? How do we get around that?
Well, the purpose of any war is wars are always started by politicians, and their purpose is to answer the question of who will rule, who's going to rule this land.
Right.
If you have a land that's ruled, that land is very easy to subjugate. It's surrenderable.
Right.
If you have an area that's actually owned by the people, it's much more difficult to capture. It's much more difficult unless you're going to destroy all of that land, which wouldn't accomplish anything. You would want to somehow rule over the people, and
right.
The only way you can rule over people is if you have a form of politics.
Right. Okay. I see where you're going, because what you're doing is you're dispersing or dividing the actual government as we know it and vesting it in all of the people, so there is no one central focal point. So if someone would invade us, they would have to, in fact, subjugate all of the people, or else they would be in the same situation or worse than we were when we were in Vietnam. Is that at least a dissonant analogy? Okay, all right. I just want to keep me on the right track, John, because I can get lost with some of this stuff. But I see what you mean. Now, so what you're saying is that since wars are started by politicians, and I agree with that, and I don't think anyone would really disagree with that today, or should ever have disagreed with that, war probably would not be on anyone's plate anyway. I mean, we couldn't expect to have war, because we would have individuals in the United States, in our country, dealing with individuals in other country, trade, or whatever, and there would be no reason to be at war, because why would you be at war with people that you're doing business with? Is that logical?
Exactly. That is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
And when the founders put together the Constitution, they sort of had that in mind. They They had each of the states was a sovereign entity, and it was kind of a general protector of those states, and all those states had their own sphere, which is everything except for what was enumerated in the federal constitution was the role and the realm of the states.
Right.
And so the states kind of a dispersed, it was much more dispersed, and the states had much more control of their own selves, and it was more dispersed, less at that time. It was much less of a vulnerability for the states.
Well,
but now that it's become much more centralized, it's different. It's more centralized. It becomes much more surrenderable. You have wars going on all the time, and at some point you have draft people that are drafted into service, and that type of thing.
Well, I can just hear people saying now, but well, how would you defend yourself against the war on terror?
Well, that's what it is terror. You terrorize people into, I mean, the terror is torture. You torture people. That's terror. Would you agree?
Right. Yeah, but how would you?
I'm
sorry. Again.
That what they're saying one thing and they're doing the exact opposite when they say that they're fighting a war on terror by torturing people. They're creating terror and they're trying to supposedly get information from people through terror, but that itself is terrorism. The what they call terrorism is people who are defending their own homeland from imperialism.
Right. Could you convince the neocons of that, John?
yes.
Therein lies our problem. Do you know, I saw an article, and I don't know how true this is, but and I don't know if what's that guy who has that television program on Fox News who's very popular these days? I can't think of his name. My mind just went blank. I know him so well.
Napolitano?
I'm sorry?
Was it Andrew Napolitano?
No. He's a neocon. Glenn Beck. Thank you very much. I don't know why I couldn't remember. And they said that he actually said, if I was president, I wouldn't last long because, you know, after I fired off all the missiles, I wouldn't have much more to do, you know. And I'm just saying that, you know, we have this mentality that we need these massive massive military infrastructure to protect us. And people don't recognize that there's no one that wants to harm us unless they feel that they're protecting themselves or their own self-interest. Obviously, there's nations like Norway who don't have, you know, gigantic armies and are at war with anyone, and they live in relative peace. But that being as it may. Now, all right, we address the military. And, oh, by the way, does the Constitution at all reference a national army at all? I don't even know if it does. I know it references the militia.
It does, and it gives the army a two-year window that it can get appropriations from the federal government. The federal government can have a navy on a continual basis, but according to the Constitution, the existing Constitution, they can only appropriate money to the army for 2 years.
Right.
Which means get it done with and have it done with and back to normalcy. But I mean, we got the U.S. has standing armies all over the world in violation of the Constitution.
Right, right. Now, I'm sorry.
They don't abide by their own rules.
Right.
I mean, at least they can abide by the Constitution.
Well, you know, one area that I find always fascinating, being a libertarian, is the fact that the people say, well, government has only specific roles, you know, the army, infrastructure, you know, and they give this laundry list of major items. Let's talk about infrastructure. Let's talk about infrastructure.
The infrastructure that is permitted in the enumerated in the Constitution as postal roads, which was basically so that people could get their information delivered to them on time, and it was to start the process. Today, the Post Service can easily be operated by private industry, and as far as interstate roads, that's definitely not in the Constitution, and it's a long stretch to put it in the Commerce Clause. They've gotten away with quite a bit from the Commerce Clause, but if it's not enumerated, they wouldn't have any reason to enumerate the functions if they're going to say, well, you can put all this other stuff in the Commerce Clause, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, people would argue that if the government, a centralized agency, was not responsible for roads for the general welfare, if you will, roads would not be built or people would own land and not allow people to trespass or whatever. What's your response to that?
Well, it's not enumerated in the Constitution, so it is not the business of the federal government by their own rules. It would be, by the Constitution, it would be the role of the state or the people. In this case, the people could create their own toll roads. Toll roads are successful throughout the world. They don't need to be funded from other sources. They should be funded by the users. If someone uses a road, he should pay to use the road. The more he uses the road, the more he should pay. If he doesn't use the road, he shouldn't have to pay to use the road.
Yeah. You know, there's an argument, and I hear this all the time, but it makes absolutely no sense, and that is, well, look, they're privatizing the roads, and now it's costing you money to drive. When before we had government roads, and it didn't cost you any money. Well, there's a fallacy there, and obviously they're missing the point, you know. Let's just Is it, in fact, less expensive?
To have the roads run on a competitive basis because the private providers of the service are going to keep costs down. If you have a monopoly running the roads, they're going to take their time. You see people working on the sides of the street, the city people, the state people building roads, and they always go over budget. They always have huge cost overruns. It's typical.
Right. Okay, John, let's just break for station identification just for a second, please.
Okay.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Yes, this evening we have with us John Frederick Kosanke. He's the author of Instead of Politics. And we're talking about the concept of not having a government, but actually self-government is, in fact, a form of government, and it's a lot more efficient and effective. We'd like you to call with your questions, your comments, and your criticisms. If you disagree, please call. We have now a toll-free number, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Now, we know you're out there. Don't let us come out there and get you. Give us a call, 888-773-4496. Of course, you can send us your email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Well, John, what areas, when you discuss this, what areas do you have the most difficulty explaining, you know, this philosophy? I wouldn't say your philosophy because it's my philosophy as well, and a philosophy of many, 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 many people. And I'm glad you're espousing it and you're putting it in a book and you're making it concise and you're being specific, because I could not do that, and I'm glad you are. Well, what other areas? What other areas do you discuss, and what kind of feedback do you get?
Well, one of the things I'd like to do is to explain in simple terms, the economics of politics, and how, when you have supply demand price, there's actually three parts to the equation. It's not supply and demand. A couple weeks ago, I heard someone on public radio saying that the supply or the demand for water has exceeded supply. Now, what exactly does that mean? The demand for water has exceeded supply. How much water is there on this planet? Most of the surface of the water of the planet is water.
Right.
There's plenty of water for everybody.
Right.
You got to add price to that equation. It makes a little bit of sense. If the demand for any good goes up, its price goes up. If the supply stays the same, If it's supply, if the supply dwindles, if you have a something that's non-renewable, its supply will diminish. Its price will go up because the demand will either stay, even if the demand stays the same, the price goes up.
Right.
So you have factors that regulate, market factors that regulate water, the use of water, the use of trees and other renewable and non-renewable sources are regulated by the laws of supply and demand. And when something like, I mean, back in grade school, I can think of when it was taught that basically that we were going to run out of trees in a few years.
Yeah.
Well, you have agroforestry. If the demand for trees goes up, people need more paper, they'll grow trees.
Right.
You can plant entire forests and you can grow trees. You can clean water. You never use up water. You can clean water, you can purify water and use it again.
Right.
That type of thing.
Yeah. And you can capture water when it rains and, you know, somehow. And, you know, there's a lot of things we can do. Things that we're not doing now, maybe because they're just economically, the alternative is not economically as viable as what we're getting now. Although much of the expense in extracting water or obtaining water to our homes is really hidden in all forms of excise taxes and other types of expenses that we get hit with, but they're not apparent. Is that so?
Mm-hmm. When we had a gas shortage with Hurricane Katrina, the price of gas went up. Immediately, the politicians came in there and said, "You can't charge that much."
Yeah.
So what happens when they try controlling prices? You get huge lines. You get people that don't get any gas, and you get some to do. So
that's
you get, just like a miniature Soviet Union, you get queues forming for these controlled prices.
Yeah.
But in the marketplace, of course, the prices are gonna shoot way up, and that's good because it encourages people to go in there. Actually, maybe travel down, get a truck, fill it with petroleum or fill it with gasoline, and bring it back and sell it.
Right. Well, you know,
it's going to cost more because there's a shortage, and that's the supply, and that's natural. Supplies will go down at certain times, and that will cause the demand to go. Well, demand stays the same, but the price will go up.
Right.
So you have a number of different factors that come into play, and it all happens naturally without politicians, without politics.
Right. Well, you know, it's amazing that anything gets done, and I guess things really don't get done when it's done via the political system because it just gets so bastardized, if you will. It never addresses the issue in the first place. Now, what about those people who say, well, you know, I want to be compassionate. You know, we have poor people. They need food stamps. Unemployment that we have, the 99ers, which are now 3 years, over 3 years, they're going to get unemployment and may go on forever. Social Security, Medicare, and all this. And all this would go away, and all these people would wind up with nothing, destitute on the street, and probably would just die of starvation. How would you answer to that?
Well, it's worse to take money from somebody by force. I mean that in itself is an error. I mean people many people will, if they see you have so many agencies and organizations that provide food, shelter, adoption for people that are less privileged. You always have those, but. If it's done through force, by forcing somebody to pay for something that he doesn't want, then you get all the elements of monopoly introduced in it, the corruption, and everything that goes along with politics.
But John, it's for the greater good.
To steal from people?
No, I mean, but the money goes for the greater good, you know, for the poor people who can't afford it, you know, subsidized housing, all this stuff. And this could only be possible only if we had a federal government that collected taxes, you know, from you rich folks, you know, and distributed to those people less fortunate.
Well, I have one of the cartoons that I use in my book. It's got Moses receiving the two tablets of stone. And saying, this doesn't apply to politics, does it? Politicians can steal, they can murder. Why are they better than the rest of us? They're humans too.
Yeah, I agree.
We're not allowed to murder. They shouldn't be allowed to steal and murder either.
Yeah, I think one thing that bothers me so much today is that voluntarily our young men and women join the armed forces. First of all, they're brainwashed also through the school system, et cetera, and believing that the United States has always done wonderful things, and that's the only reason why we go overseas is for the betterment of mankind and whatever. And they're influenced by the advertisements like "Be All You Can Be," and you see computer operators and all this other stuff, and people getting great jobs afterwards. And they're influenced by that, and yet the government is really fooling them. They're lying to them. Then they have them go to some third world country and to literally kill people for them. They're saying, go over there and kill these people. And when you think about it, they don't know who these people are. They have no beef with these people. But they have to be, they have to follow orders. They have to be obedient, and they have to kill, and they kill, and they come back all warped in the head. And I think that's so incredibly cruel. And yet we don't see that. We say, I'm so proud of Johnny. He's served 3 years in Afghanistan. Didn't come back alive, but we're really proud of him. And I don't know how to answer to that. I really
believe
don't.
That. Yeah, they believe that they're protecting the country, but I made a reference, to my book to the Milgram experiment. Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm sorry, say that again.
The Milgram experiment.
No, I'm not familiar.
The Milgram experiment is an experiment that was done about 20 years ago, I believe it was, where they there was. Some people they set up an office. They had some professional-looking experts in white robes, or to look like experts, and they recruited some people for this experiment. One of them was an actor, but one of them was not. The one that was an actor was to be asked some questions. He was put in another room, and all of the people, the participants, sat down in a chair in the same office on a table. With a mechanism in front of them that they would ask a question, and if the respondent made the wrong answer, they would push a button that would give him an electric shock.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
And each time that he made a wrong answer, they would increase the voltage and give him another shock, and they could hear him banging on the wall when it got to a point where the shock was intolerable.
Right.
And the majority of the people who were in this experiment exceeded the lethal dosage of electricity that would have killed the other person.
Yeah.
And just because they were obeying authority, they turned to the other person, to the director, and he said, "You need to continue. You need to continue the experiment."
Right.
And they would, because he said so.
Yeah. John, we have a caller. Let's see what this caller has to say. Caller, your first name, please, and your question or comment, please.
Hi, my name's Pat, and I'm in Oklahoma City. I have a question about the situation that exists now with black market and drugs, and the situation with drug cartels. Most of us in this country feel that the government is necessary to fight against the drug war. However, they've actually created the market for drugs. And I wondered what your situation, what your ideal situation would be in that respect. Would the, if the government didn't regulate usage of drugs, would that be your suggestion? Go ahead. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Well, drugs, it's not a political issue. It's a medical issue. If somebody has a drug problem, it's not something that he should be jailed for. It's a medical issue. And the U.S. experimented with prohibition of alcohol, and it was unsuccessful. They went through the proper channels at the time. They introduced an amendment to prohibit the sale, use, and distribution of alcohol. The mafia proliferated. It became quality of all alcohol was reduced significantly until it was dangerous in many cases. But the mafia grew strong. When you have prohibition, you still have sales. You still have the demand, but the distribution becomes monopolized by the most brutal sales army, the one with the biggest guns. So, no, definitely prohibition is not a solution. And today, the politicians don't even bother going through the proper channels of introducing a prohibition amendment for prohibiting the use of drugs.
Yep.
But they prohibit it in other forms, other unconstitutional forms. So, first of all, they are breaking their own rules by having this type of prohibition. Secondly, it does not work at all. No.
Well, would the free market prohibit drugs, or how do you think that would work, John?
Well, you can get drugs at a drugstore. Pharmacist will sell you drugs if you get a prescription. Some people, I mean, if you wanted to get stoned, you're going to find a way to do it,
right.
Whether it's a prescription drug, whether it's airplane glue, whether it's gasoline, whatever use you want. If you wanted to find a way to escape, you're going to find a way to do it. Drugs, there's so many different types of drugs, and in many states are now legalizing they're legalizing certain drugs, less hard drugs, and they're not having trouble that medicinal marijuana is being legalized. So it's gradually they're gradually coming around to legalization of drugs.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, you know, because when I went to a meeting one time, and there was a gentleman who was the speaker from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and he made his strong point was that, you know, legalizing drugs may not solve the drug problem, but it will solve the crime problem. And once you solve the crime problem, it's much easier to solve the drug problem. And that eventually will wane, just like anything else, you know. And I think he made a good point there.
That's very well put.
Yeah.
John, I agree with that.
How do we... it seems like we're going in the opposite direction that you're espousing. And it seems to be we're going faster and faster, especially with this citizen surveillance centers in each state and all this other stuff. And it seems like we're going further and further, more towards a totalitarian type of society. And you are pushing in the exact opposite direction. And I'm with you, believe it, 100%. This, you know, let everything, it'll work out. Somehow we'll find a way to do it, and it'll work out much better. We won't have these problems. How do we turn this boat around?
Well, knowledge is the first thing. I mean, if people start to understand simple supply and demand, price, how it all ends up being a question of supply, demand, and price, they're going to understand that you know, these are monopolies. Monopolies tend to reduce quality, that type of thing. Totalitarianists, I think, they're going faster than. I mean, it's probably good right now that they are trying as hard as they are to introduce a totalitarian dictatorship, because people are waking up faster than they were several years ago, and I think there's a big groundswell right now of people who are waking up, and they're not I mean, the Tea Party movement, I think, is a manifestation of that.
Right.
It's in essence, the Tea Party movement is a protest against just that, against authoritarian government. I think the parties will probably milk that. I don't know if it's going to go the way of the Goldwater Revolution, which you know, decayed quickly. I mean, it brought Reagan into power, and it died shortly thereafter. But it's reawakening with, I believe, the Ron Paul Revolution, that
right.
type of thing.
Right.
I think people are right at the moment. They are waking up, but I think they will go back to sleep as soon as they become comfortable with a few small changes. But I think it might. I don't know if it's slowing down or not, but I think it's inevitable that at some point people are going to wake up and break out of their shells and just get rid of the whole concept of politics.
Well, I hope so. Let's just break again for station identification, and we'll be right back.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure Libertarian Talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, we have as our guest this evening, John Frederick Kosanke. He's the author of Instead of Politics. John smashes the whole concept of politics, showing how only the free market can solve the ills of society. Please join us by calling with your questions or comments, toll-free, 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. I know you're out there. Please, don't be bashful. Call. You will not be interrupting us. John, what about the monetary system? What kind of monetary system would you propose?
Well, when the founders came up with the Constitution, they had assumed that just as at the time there were many people coining money, there would continue to be people coining money, and they gave the federal government permission to coin, not print, coin money.
Right.
At the time, but they did not give a monopoly to the federal government. When you have competing currencies, competing banks, you have stability. When you have one centralized bank regulating the one currency, you're going to have valleys and peaks.
Right. The Federal Reserve was established purportedly to ameliorate all those valleys and peaks and to ensure stable economy, and it hasn't done a very good job of that, has it?
Didn't work, did it?
We've had the Great Depression and several recessions, and now look what we're going through.
When you have a hard currency, normally that hard currency is gold or silver, and it has a solid backing. Its value cannot be manipulated up or down. When you have a paper currency, you can roll the printing presses and make as much so-called money as you like. But what happens when you hit with the supply-demand price equation? You have an increase of supply of currency. Its value goes down.
Right.
And if the value of the dollar goes down, the cost of goods goes up.
Yeah.
Takes more dollars to make purchases, and that's what you call inflation.
John, how do you envision a gold standard working today? Would it be similar to the way the standard we had at one time, where there would be gold in, for example, Fort Knox, and the government would then print receipts, depository receipts for that gold, and that would be the currency in circulation? Or how do you see this working?
Well, if the government follows its own rules, it would need to back up its currency, since it's allowed to coin money, and no state is permitted to have anything other than gold and silver coin as a legal tender. Now, that's still in the Constitution. People say that a gold standard is silly. Well, it's still in the Constitution, so it's still the law of the land, but it's
right.
not being enforced.
Right.
When you have competing currencies, You have competing providers of currency, competing coinages. You have stability. What was the last part of your question?
I forgot. I was listening to you, and it fell out of my head. You know, I'm surprised I'm not bleeding here, John, in the studio. I'm sorry. I just forgot. I'm awfully sorry. I'm totally embarrassed the whole thing. Now, if we had a monetary, I guess we've had a monetary system where would just the government print the money and determine how much money be needed for, you know, for the economy at large, and then just maintain its steady amount of money or increase it as the GDP goes up, for example, or something like that. How do you envision that working?
Okay, well, any federal currency would be in competition with private currencies. So the government has given itself permission to coin money, so it could continue to coin money, not print, but coin.
Right.
And at the same time, private companies, private coinages private coiners could continue to coin their own money as in the past. Now, if anybody coins money, he gets promptly raided and tossed into jail.
Right, right.
But and you would have, if you have competing currencies, you have stability.
All right. So anyone can, provided they had silver or gold, can make their own coins and then use that as a medium of exchange.
Right. You have several e-gold and several other companies that provide digital gold where you actually make a deposit in some form of currency, and they hold for you that in gold, platinum, silver, whatever your choice of metal, and it would stay in that account, and you could actually use a credit card type of payment or make payments online, which would come out of your gold account.
Right.
That's one option, which could be very easily used. It already exists, but hasn't been standardized yet. It hasn't been used to any great extent right now.
Well, you know, what would be interesting, and I may be going way off the cliff here or just too far out, but if we had a gold standard, as you're suggesting, and we were trading with other countries overseas, how would their fiat currencies be valued against our gold standard currency? Could you imagine how that would work, or can you give me some insight on that? Because that one just gave me a hemorrhage, you know, when I thought of that.
Well, it's really not that complicated. I mean, if you take out the borders from the equation, there's actually just trades going on between people who happen to be in other parts of the globe.
Right.
You want to buy a product that you and the seller will agree on a currency based on the value of that currency to buy a product based on the value of that product.
Right.
There's really nothing fancy about it. The economists would like to have you think that it's some kind of Armageddon if you don't have a national currency.
Yeah, but if you're selling something to someone overseas and they're not on the gold standard and you are, and they want to give you their fiat currency, would there be reluctance to do so, and would that make our currency so hard and so much higher than the currencies overseas that would put us at a disadvantage in the balance of trade?
Well, the currency is just a medium of exchange. So the real value is going to be the value of the product up against the demand for that product. You want to buy a product from someone in another land. You're going to look at how much that product is worth to you, and you're going to pay him in a currency that he feels is something that he would be willing to accept for his product. And the same goes the other way around. If you're selling something to him, he's gonna buy it. If he wants to buy it, if he can afford it, he's gonna give you a value that you feel is something that product is worth.
But see, my demented mind is thinking this way, and it's wrong. But I just know it because my mind is wrong, I think. But you know, people saying, "Well, geez, I can trade with the United States, or I can buy U.S. dollars that are backed in gold, and I can give my fiat toilet paper currency in exchange." And wouldn't that be a run on our currency?
I don't really understand your question.
Well, I guess I'm thinking of currency exchange, and maybe this would not apply. But if people had yuans or whatever, you know, the current pesos or whatever, or rubles, and would they not want to trade in their Russian rubles for U.S. Gold-backed currency?
Depending on the sale, if the buyer wants to buy some rubles, or he wants to exchange his good or service for a ruble, that's what he'll accept. Otherwise, he'd have to go through a change house, which would convert that currency to whatever it's worth in the other currency.
I guess my question is that the competing currencies that are not on the gold standard would look a lot less attractive, and it would cost a lot more. You'd have to pay more rubles for $1 than you would right now under the current system. And I'm getting way out there. You know, I realize that, and maybe I'm getting off on a tangent, but I'm just thinking of how that would work in international trade, because most of the currencies are so inflated now, and most of the countries are bankrupt anyway. And if we had a gold standard, it would seem like everyone would want U.S. dollars, and everyone would want to dump whatever they have now. But okay, I'll rest in peace on that one. John, we have about 8 more minutes left. I want to leave that time for you to discuss any other aspects that we didn't cover. And, of course, to help, promote your book and what you are doing right now. So why don't you go with that for now?
Okay. One point that I like to bring across in my book is that the official media likes to put everything in two dimensions. They say there's the left wing and the right wing. And when there's some type of a problem, it's always the fault of the other wing.
Right.
So it's all the people, all the Democrats get the blame and the Republicans get the blame from the Democrats. When in reality, it's not so simple. It's actually. Have you heard of the Nolan chart?
No, I haven't.
Are you familiar with the Nolan? Okay, the Nolan chart plots the political ideologies on a three-dimensional graph. If you take the traditional right, they have they are for economic liberties and against personal liberties, essentially. And the Democrats or the left is the other side. They're for personal liberties and against economic liberties.
Right.
So you actually have two different scales that the media likes to put on one scale, and it doesn't work that way. So you have, for them, you have on the right the Nazis, and on the left you have the socialists.
Right.
And libertarians, they don't fit anywhere. Then maybe they're extreme something. But if you're extreme right, that means you're Nazi.
Right.
But if you take these two scales and put them on a graph with an X and Y, you have... On the bottom right, you have the economic liberty of 100, and on the left, you have economic controls of 0.
Right.
And then going up on the y-axis, on the bottom, you have the personal liberty of 0 and personal liberty of 100% on the top. And so, and the libertarian quadrant or the the libertarian quadrant would be in the upper right square, and the totalitarians would be the lower left square. So actually the Nazis and the socialists would all fit in the totalitarian square.
Right.
And so it really opens up picture quite a bit. On the back cover of my book, I've got a graph that I got from LibertyDemocrats.com, I believe it was, which kind of explains what Congress looks like, the way that they vote on issues. And you have the Republicans all clustered together in the authoritarian quadrant.
Yep.
And you have the Democrats clustered together in the upper left quadrant. So actions speak louder than words. The Republicans talk about economic liberty, but when you look at their actual voting record, it's just not that.
Right.
So
is that similar to the I'm sorry, John.
Go ahead.
Is that similar to the world's smallest political quiz? Yeah, is that the same?
Yeah, that is the Nolan Star.
Oh, that is? Okay. Yeah. I stand corrected. Yes, I'm familiar with it. But it's interesting, the people that I have asked to take that quiz, I'd say 70% of the time, they come out to be very libertarian, but they profess not to be libertarian. I think that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, John, your book is available via Amazon, right? And how else can they acquire your book?
They could acquire it directly through createspace.com or amazon.com. But if there's anybody listening that would like to actually buy this book and likes it so much that they would like to promote it, you can actually go to amazon.com and get a link if you join their affiliates program.
Right. Okay.
And you can earn commissions on sales. So if you have a website, you can put a link to this book on your site, and anybody who, as a result of clicking on that link, buys a book, you earn a commission. Or if you don't have a website and you just want to experiment with some ads, you can put together an ad at something like a site called blogads.com or something similar to that. You can create an ad, and you can put the same link in there so that you can put your ad on some site. Anyone who buys the book as a result of clicking on that ad, you will earn a commission.
Okay.
So that's, if you like the book that much, that's one way that you can earn money by helping me sell it.
All right, very good. John, I'd like to ask if you would like an official Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt, if you would send me an email with a mailing address and your T-shirt size, I'd be more than happy to send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt.
Absolutely.
For being our guest. Okay. And I'll look
I'll
look forward to your email. John, thank you so much. This is, folks, this is John Frederick Kosanke, author of Instead of Politics, Buy the Book. John, good evening, and thank you very much for being our guest this evening.
I'm so glad you let me on your show. Thanks, Joel.
Bye-bye now.
You have a good day.
Wow, that was interesting. You know, it really is interesting when, you know, the concept that we have of the need for government is not really valid, not at all. And we need to educate the world in that regard. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at area code 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle, something I love to do, by the way. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.